हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनामधीतमस्तु मा देवेशावहै नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 65. So this is continuing with, this is Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. I have a wealth of powers because of holding the foot dust of the Brahmana on my head crown. Because of that, my foot water purifies the whole universe as the Ganga. This type of respect is actually just a joke.
Right, but he's pointing out is by keeping the dust from the feet of the devotees on his head, that's why his feet then purify the water that's known as the Ganges, right? So he's saying in this in a joking way.
The cows and brahmanas are not different from me since they are my body. This is also a joke.
These elements is that they're non-different from him, but at the same time is that difference being that that respect has to be there. He's saying this because of particular mood and flavor, that this is, he wants people to respect the Brahmins, he wants them to respect the cows. So that aspect is there. But to the extreme that he's presenting it, then that's a joke, right? But it's done very pleasantly and nicely. Right? But it's instructive at the same time. Right, so that we have to understand is these joking aspects are the Lord's, how you say, pleasant dealings with the devotees. Does that make sense? So it's not taken as a joke that it's facetious or that it doesn't mean anything. But this is actually, no, it means something. Right? I am controlled by brahmanas who offend others. It is the natural, end quote, it is the natural quality of the brahmana to become angry. I and my devotee laugh at them. I give natural tolerance only to my devotees, and I will be controlled by that alone. Because tolerance did not appear in Jaya Vijaya at this time, I have shown indifference to them. Thus, they have been cursed by you, and it will not be otherwise. Because I was not indifferent to Ambarish, there was no effect from the anger of Durvasa. On the contrary, the burning produced by my chakra was directly produced by me, a lover of Brahmins. Thus, Durvasa fell at the feet of Ambarish. So here that tolerance is then the element, because Krishna and the devotees are tolerant. Though Brahmins become angry, Krishna and his devotees become tolerant. So because but at the same time, is he's indifferent towards these Brahmins. Right? He protects them, but he's indifferent. But he's favorable to the devotees. Right? So because Jai and Vijay weren't tolerant, right? That's why then he's not giving them that same protection. But Ambarish was, therefore the Lord protected him. Yes?
What does it mean he's indifferent to the Brahmins?
Indifferent means it's, how do you say? As they deal, he reciprocates.
Everybody?
But there's a difference. That's just you've done this, you get that. It's not on the. It doesn't have the emotional content. Mm-hmm. With devotees, there's that emotional content. Does that make sense? You know. So. How do you say? Because here we're meaning Brahmins who are not devotees. They're following everything properly, But so they're protected, they're taken care of, but at the same time as they're following the rules, so they're protected by the rules, right? They're following Dharma, Dharma protects them, right? But with devotees, they're surrendered to Krishna as a person, so Krishna as a person protects them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so therefore Durvasa, he was burned by the Sudarshan Chakra, right? And so he had to surrender to Ambarish. Yes.
About this quality of anger, I think one of the qualities that mentioned in Bhagavad Gita by the Brahmanas is Shanta, so
it's peaceful. But if something comes up that is wrong, then they tend to get angry very easily.
Why?
Because it's wrong. You know, in other words, if Shastra's not being followed, that aspect they may get angry about. It also depends on the mood of the person. You know what I'm saying? If the mood is pleasant, then that will be, you know, and dealing nicely, then that won't be manifest so much. But if it's not, then it'll come up. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because here is that Prabhupada mentions that philosophical deviation is worse than sensual deviation. Right? From our background, we take it the other way around, because philosophy, who even knows philosophy? Right? You know, everybody's got their philosophy. You know, well, my philosophy, if you, you know, eat plenty of bananas, then, you know, the world will become peaceful. Or something. You know, I mean, everybody's got something, you know. Like that, you know. So, but if there's a sensual deviation, oh, that's the greatest sin that anyone can do, right? Because it's like, you know, regularly in the news, you always hear some member of government that is being brought down because of some revelation of some sort. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we take that as the worst. So in that area, then they're going to be tolerant and not bothered. But if it's philosophically wrong, that's where they're going to become strong and angry. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because also, when you control the senses, then that power is more, so that if it does come out, it could come out very strongly. Does that make sense? You get that in the Munis also. Because right? That's the thing, is that they control the senses, they become angry, they curse. Right? Brahmins, it's not necessarily that they curse, but Munis, then it seems to be, because they're even more focused on controlling the senses and everything like that. Does that make sense? So it kind of goes together. So that's the unique thing with the devotees, is those qualities don't necessarily manifest like that. So that puts them even above the Brahmanas. So the Brahmanas are the head of society, but Vaishnavas are above that. Does that make sense? Does that work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this illustrated with how the Brahmanas dealt with King Vena? They were, in one respect, they were detached, but on the other hand, when he crossed the line, they had to...
Yes. No, so they tolerate up to a point that it's still workable, but once he crosses beyond where it's not workable, then they become angry. Yeah. So that's the principles are tolerant, but if you push it, then... Does that make sense? Because otherwise, see, if the difficulty is if you're always nice, people don't take you seriously. If you become angry, then people notice, oh, okay. You know.
But sometimes they're right, but sometimes they're wrong.
But no, these ones are right.
Yeah, not
the problem. Yeah, so this is what we're talking about. I mean, those who are practicing the Vedic culture and like that, then you'll see that. Then it's because it's based on that. Okay. Yes.
So what would be the difference between Brahmana becoming angry and Kshatriya becoming angry? Because we see bulls getting angry.
The Brahmana will come up fast but go down fast, and they can forgive and move on. Well, the Kshatriyas, if they get angry, generally, you know, it'll go away socially, that you won't see it, but generally they have a tendency to never forgive.
So they keep grudges?
Yeah, they keep grudges. But the more sattvic, then they don't. Like Yudhishthira doesn't. And because of that, that's why Karna considered him actually a Brahmin. He wouldn't fight with him. Because he said he's a Brahmin, he's not a Kshatriya. He's just too pure. Like that. No, but like Bhima, now he keeps a grudge. You know? He knows how to nourish that grudge, you know, like that. So when he got Duryodhana alone, you know, that, you know, you had basically a lifetime of feelings being expressed. Like that. You know, so that's the thing, is that, but it's based on religious principles, so that's why it's not a problem. But at the same time, is if the training's not great, you're still going to have the inherent nature. That's the thing, Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, you're going to see that nature. It's going to act according to its nature. But depending upon training, you'll see the finer aspects of it or not. You're like Duryodhana. Now, he's also Kshatriya nature. But you see, because of he wasn't able to absorb those teachings, skill-wise, we have to admit that skill-wise, he was a good Kshatriya. Right? He knew politic, he knew administration, he knew war, he knew all these things. And so, and when it came to, when it came to having support for the battle, he actually had more support than Yudhishthira. So that means he knows how to influence, he knows how to perform his duties. And that way he's good. But the problem is that's the Varna side. But the Ashram side, that was where his weakness was. He didn't have really enough character. That's why he wasn't qualified. Skill-wise, yes, but character-wise, no. Does that make sense? That's why you see such a difference. So even though someone like Bhima may be, you know, known for his anger, but that anger is always controlled by Yudhishthira Maharaj's direction. So if Yudhishthira Maharaj says, do this, he just does it. Well, Duryodhana, the whole world can tell him to do this, he won't do it. You know? Like that. So you see is that the inherent nature you're not going to get rid of, but it's a matter of the quality of it. So basically you could say is you have Yudhishthira at one end and Duryodhana or Vena at the other end. Like that. So then anything in between, but the nature is the same. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So therefore, the Brahminika will be that same. So they may get more easily anger or for maybe lesser degree of things, but still that anger can be pacified and it will go away. Because the inherent nature is not to be angry. The Kshatriya nature is to prefer to be peaceful, but you know you're right on the edge of being angry. You know, right? If everybody's doing exactly what you want, then that's what you want, and you're peaceful. But if anything's wrong, then there's no tolerance. Like that. For with the Brahmin, there's tolerance up to the point where it's not workable. Right? At that point, then they get angry. Well, the Kshatriya get angry at a much earlier stage. Is that make sense? Yeah. Because both of them, you're dealing with Dharma. You know, it's just there's more or less tolerance. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. The four Brahmin sages were nevertheless extremely delighted to behold him. And they experienced a thrill throughout their bodies. Then they then spoke as follows to the Lord, who had revealed the multi-glories of the Supreme Personality through his internal potency, Yoga Maya. Verse 15. Srila Prabhupada introduces the speech of the Kumaras as follows. The sages were almost too puzzled to speak before the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the first time, and the hairs of their bodies stood erect due to their extreme joy. Because they have never seen the Lord before this. Right? They've heard about Him, but they've never seen Him. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur helps us to understand their contemplation in his purport to the same verse. Considering for a long time whether the Lord favored or condemned them, they concluded that the Lord was pleased with them, and thus they rejoiced. They spoke to the Lord, who had revealed great powers by his yoga maya from the beginning. If the most powerful Lord, who is not dependent on anyone else, has criticized us in the form of praise, and we will be punished, then he would say clearly that we Brahmanas should fall to hell since we offended his devotees. So that's what he's saying, is that it's not that these elements aren't part of his personality and how he deals, because he respects the Brahmins and does all that. But it's actually the power of the Brahmins comes from him. So that's the joke aspect, saying that because I keep the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees and Brahmins on my head, that's why my feet have the power to purify the three worlds. Right? Because actually their power comes from him. But in the culture, he applies it the other way around. Right? That's the fun. Is that what the more powerful takes the junior position. Right? And it's just like the father or the grandfather, you know, they will take the junior position to this small, you know, child. Right? If there's a wrestling match or a fight, who wins? The child. Right? And very dramatically also. Right? So that's the fun. That's the taste. So Krishna does like this, but philosophically, actually, it's a joke. And in this case, it's only applied because it's used to chastise the Kumaras. So it's done as a praise, but actually it's pointing out the weakness. Right? Does that make sense? Because they're Jnana Bhaktas. Right? If you're saying this to the devotees, then they would take it as that this is how the Lord behaves, this is how he prefers to act. So it wouldn't be a joke. That would be just his pastime. But with the Kumaras, who are Jnana Bhaktas, so they know all the philosophy. That's basically what they function on. So then they know this is all incorrect by the tattva. So then they can understand they're being criticized here. Does this make sense? Yeah. So we shouldn't take this as a joke. Means it's not true. In this application, then it's a joking way to criticize. Because you always start like that. Right? The mildest is you just pleasantly say something. Right? The next is you are sarcastic. Right? Next is you're strong. Next you start yelling. You know, next is you're quiet. You say nothing. Then next you blow up. And then next there's some kind of serious repercussion. That's just the natural tendency. So, yeah. The sages said, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, we are unable to know what you intend for us to do. For even though you are the supreme ruler of all, you speak in our favor as if we have done something good for you. Right? So they can't figure out what's going on because, one, it is the pastime of the Lord. They've taken part in this pastime. But it's not that the mentality that they had that they took part was right. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, somebody has their karma, right? And according to the law, everybody's karma comes through someone else. Right? It doesn't just appear there. It comes through somebody. It's always personal. Right? Does that make sense? It means there's somebody sitting in the car that ran you over. Right? It's always personal. Right? Okay? So the thing is
That's your karma. It's supposed to happen like that. Right? So then one could say, okay, so the guy who, you know, in the truck that ran over the old lady, then he's not at fault because he's just an instrument in the karma. Right? But the point is why is he being an instrument in the karma? There's a billion people out there. Why him? Right? Because he has the mentality that he's agreeing to be the deliverer of that karma. Right? And so what he's doing to deliver the karma, that itself is wrong. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is you have, so that's his free will, it's your predestiny. Because he didn't have to be driving, he could have been paying attention. You know, he didn't have to be talking on his phone or trying to adjust the radio or, you know, looking for his, you know, pack of cigarettes or something. You know, but he was. So therefore, he's the medium for your karma. But that's his free will. For you, that's just what's going to happen. Does this make sense? So you have this overlying thing happening at once. So you can't look at it as just one and just as the other. Right? So the driver will look at it, I should have been more careful. And the person who got run over, they look at it, it's my karma. Because also, I should have been more careful anyway. Why am I standing out in the street when there's a truck going by? Right? Does that make sense? But it's all arranged. The modes of nature do everything all at once. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why law is very technical, right? You have to be very trained to appreciate it. The common person can't actually understand law, right? Because there's so many elements. And those elements then, by people who are trained, they're dealing with it. Because if you leave it up to the common person, right, you know, they're always out with pitchforks and torches. You know, so everybody's going to be tarred, feathered, or something. Right? For anything that goes wrong. You know? So that's why it takes refinement to understand. Now, the Kumaras, now, you're not going to get any more intelligent persons than them, other than Brahma. And still, they can't understand because the Lord's intelligence is so far beyond everyone else's. So now, he's talking about, he sanctions this, but at the same time, his presentation of their involvement, it sounded like a praise, but it was a joke. So that means they were being criticized. So the Lord wants this, but they're being criticized. You know, so they're confused, right? That's the point. So then, you know, so this is revealed through the acharyas because the devotees then can understand. Right? So that's by the acharyas then we can appreciate. Yes.
What happens if you are an instrument of someone's karma and you don't take responsibility?
And what does it matter whether you take responsibility or not? You're still responsible.
Yeah, that's my question. Let's say, I know this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and then I just tell someone, well, you know, it's your karma, but I was just an instrument. Like,
I was
just the instrument. Like,
yeah, but what's your business telling them that? That's someone else's business telling them that.
Yeah, but the business why they are telling that is just to say, you know, don't come here and be angry with me because actually it's your karma.
No, but what does that guy have to do with reality?
The reality.
Because yes, okay, it's true. It is the karma. But then what about the free will of the person who is involved?
Yeah.
So why is it they're telling them that?
Because they want to say, I'm innocent.
Yeah, but that's not their business.
Yeah.
It's someone else's business to say that. Does that make sense? Because the point is if they're talking about it's the truth, that's only half the truth. What about the other half of the truth that they're responsible?
I just wonder if the reactions are more heavy when you actually don't even want to look into what kind of mistakes you do.
Is this talking about yourself or others doing that to you?
Well, it happened to me last year, actually.
Yeah, the point is It's not that the reaction is more, it's just going to take more reaction to get them to understand. Does that make sense? It's just like this. Someone tells you, you know, smoking's bad for you, right? You know, like that. So what, right? You go to the store to buy the packs. You know, there's a big sign there that says, this is going to kill you. You don't care, right? You know, you start to see friends, you know, having problems. You're coughing, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So because of that lack of sensitivity, how far does it take? I saw one video of a lady. She had, what do you call it, Yeah, she has a thing here. She's smoking. And then while she's smoking, she's talking about, you know, what is all this nonsense about, you know, smoking has anything to do with cancer. And you know, to her it was just somehow another bad luck. She made no connection that her smoking had anything to do with, you know, her situation. So that's the whole thing, is that if you learn earlier, then things are less. As a karmi, whatever you're supposed to get, you're going to get anyway, whether you understand it or not. But as a devotee, if you understand, then it gets less. Because the point of these things is simply reformation. Now, for the karmis, it's understood there is no reformation. So therefore, it's just justice. They did this, they get that. Right? They did something 10%, they get 10%. They did 20, they get 20. Right? Because even they get it, they still won't understand. They'll feel bad for a few, you know, for a few minutes, and then they'll go back to whatever they were doing. So it's there because it has to be there. Because if it wasn't, then there would be actually no order at all. Does that make sense? But for the devotees, then they can understand something's actually wrong because of the connection with the Lord. So even though, let's say, they've done something 90, but you know, their understanding is, you know, dropped it down to 10, they only get 10 reactions. Right? But that's because they actually understand it, not because they think that's what it should be. I'm a devotee, it should be less. No, then it's definitely not going to be less.
So was it wrong from my side to try to help them understand that they were also like...
Yeah, but did you try to let them understand your side also?
Yes.
You told them that you are responsible and you're, you know, like that and like that. It is your karma, but someone has to be the instrument, and somehow or another, by my conditioning, I was willing to be the instrument, and so I'm sorry for that, but, you know, it's all, were you explaining that? That's complete. Why you'd only explain their side and not your side? You know what I'm saying? So that's not... culturally proper. It's not fully philosophical, and it's also not culturally proper. See, someone else other than who's making the problem should say, don't worry, it's your karma, this, that. But the person who's actually the instrument shouldn't be saying, oh, it's your karma. You know what I'm saying? It's just culturally not correct. Philosophically may be correct, but then, as I said, you're only dealing with 50%. That, but yeah, as long as you're not the instrument.
No, I was the one receiving the karma.
You're the one receiving the karma.
It was my destiny.
Yes, that's there, but the person who was the medium for that shouldn't be the one explaining that.
No.
Right? Unless they want to explain the whole package and how their involvement, how they're wrong for being involved, and that they're, you know, sorry about that also. And from that, because they've done that in their free will, they will also get the karma of that. But the point is who's it about? In this situation, who's it about? Who's the victim?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that's the problem. The modern is turned it upside down.
I think in one sense, all of other victims, as long as we don't know.
That's if you were in the material world. But the point is if we're dealing with the culture, the person who's been offended is the victim. You know what I'm saying? Because, like that. Does that make sense? At the same time, as the modern can really turn it upside down and everybody becomes the victim. So here is that the person that has done the wrong, they're worried about their people, you know, the social reactions, this, that. So they're trying to save their own skin here. They're not really caring about the person that just got offended. They're only caring about themselves. That's why I'm saying they're unqualified to be involved. Does this make sense? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura's purport to verse 16 helps to explain the Lord's intentions. Though they had understood, they again asked questions in order to hear from the mouth of the Lord his intentions. We do not know your intention, whether you want to be merciful to us or want to punish us. Since you, the Supreme Lord, say to us that we have shown mercy to you, and since that is impossible, wanting to punish us, you first joke with us. Or maybe desiring to favor us to help spread dharma that you created, since you favor brahmanas, you actually are praising us. Please tell your intention to us, since we are ignorant and unable to understand what you desire. Right? So his instruction about the glories of the brahman is there, but because of the context of what's being said, you can understand he's joking with them. Right? And so if he's joking with them, there's something wrong, but at the same time he approves what happened. So this is the confusion.
Brahmanas, they are straightforward usually?
Depends upon the particular nature. Them, yes, straightforward. Means if, in other words, if their area of expertise is political correctness, then you, there's no guarantee you know anything what they're saying. Like that. And they'll be the best at it. Like that. But with them, no, it's straightforward. They're simply saying. But they want to hear from the Lord because they understood all these things. So if he's chastising them, but is saying he approves it, so that means the ultimate point is approval. But there's something wrong in their behavior that they took part in it. So there's some reason the Lord wants this curse, but at the same time that they're cursing his own devotees, that's not proper. Right? So they can understand both, but they want to hear from the Lord just to make sure. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. But otherwise, generally, see, as for the devotional aspect, if that's stronger, then the political side generally be less. But if that's somebody's specific weakness in their conditioning, then it may be stronger. Right? But, you know, you see, there's being political, and then there's actually knowing what you're doing. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, it does. So, many are political, but they don't know what they're doing. They don't know politic. But if they know politic and they're political, then that you don't know what they're doing. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
O Lord, quote, O Lord, you are the supreme director of the Brahminical culture. You are considering the Brahmanas to be in the highest position is your example for teaching others. Actually, you are the supreme worshipable deity, not only for the gods, but for the Brahmanas also. You are the source of the eternal occupation of all living entities. And by your multi-manifestations of personalities of Godhead, you have always protected religion. Right? So, He's the as pointed out here, the direct. He's the support of the Brahminical culture, because that's the actual culture that the whole spiritual realm works on, right? That's the culture of the spiritual world. So he's supporting that. And so, but he's supporting it because he's showing that you should worship the Brahmins. So he worships the Brahmins. But actually, he's the worshipable deity of the Brahmins. Right, and so not only of the Brahmins, then everybody else also, everybody's occupational duties. Right, he's the support for that, because he is Dharma. He protects Dharma, and in his incarnations, he is Dharma. Right, the Shastras describe Dharma, so everything's about it. You are the supreme object of religious principle. So he's protecting Dharma, but the whole point of Dharma is to serve the Lord.
And in our opinion, you are inexhaustible and unchangeable eternally. Right? Because they're jnana bhaktas, so these are going to be the qualities that stand out. Mystics and transcendentalists, by the mercy of the Lord, cross beyond nescience by ceasing all material desires. And so it's not by their own, they think it's by their own austerities and meditation, but it's by the mercy of the Lord. Because the Lord's given this path of austerity and meditation. So you follow it properly, then the Lord is kind, he gives you the results. It's not that because I'm doing it, that's why. Does that make sense? Yeah. It is not possible, therefore, that the Supreme Lord can be favored by others. But in culture, he is. Right? Mother Jashoda is giving blessings, but technically he's the source of his energy, so he is giving the blessings to them. Right? But in the culture, then it's the other way. That's why one has to understand the philosophy and the culture, because they're seemingly contradictory. Like that. Right? 17 through 19. Putting the proper perspective on who gets favor is the point to Srila Prabhupada's purport. Unless one is favored by the Supreme Lord, one cannot cross over the ocean of nescience of repeated birth and death. Here it is stated that yogis or mystics cross beyond nescience by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many kinds of mystics, such as the Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, Jnana Yogi, and Bhakti Yogi. The Karmis particularly search after the favor of the demigods. The Jnanis want to become one with the Supreme Absolute Truth. And the Yogis are satisfied simply by partial vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, and ultimately by oneness with Him. So they get a partial understanding of the Supreme Lord, but only localized, not actually... He's a person, but it's not about His personality. Right? But then ultimately, it's about oneness with the Lord. Because if it's about serving the Lord, then they would move forward into bhakti yoga. Right? They wouldn't remain. So from the jnana yoga, you either have to move forward to bhakti yoga or back into jnana yoga. Right there. But the bhaktas, the devotees, want to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally and serve Him. It has already been admitted that the Lord is eternal, and those who want the favor of the Supreme Lord perpetually are also eternal. So it's not about the perpetualness of the Lord, it's about the perpetualness of the relationship. Right? So that's where you see the difference. So it's true, He is eternal, He is, you know, omniscient, omnipresent, but that's not the main focus of the devotee. The devotee is about the interaction with the Lord eternally. But the jnana bhakta is about appreciating these qualities of the Lord.
So it's about eternity itself.
Yes. Because He is eternity, but that's just His existence. But the point is He's a person. So that's more important than the existence. Right? Therefore, yogis here means devotees. By the mercy of the Lord, devotees can easily pass beyond the nescience of birth and death and attain the eternal abode of the Lord. Right? So they attain easily, while these mystics, other mystics, it's very, very difficult. Right? The meditation process, the process of renunciation, the process of karma, these are very difficult processes. Right? You do something wrong, it just doesn't work. But for devotees, then they very easily progress. So even if something's going wrong, they're still progressing, just slower. And if you get rid of what's wrong, then it becomes very quick. So, yes?
So can we say because the process is personal, then Krishna personally helps us?
Yes. No, that's
even if we make mistakes.
Even when we make mistakes and even we don't necessarily understand Him fully as a person, He is a person that is taking care. And so the actual point is the more we understand how He as a person is involved, then the more we develop devotion. Because it's not about technique. Technique is only there to remind us of something. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, you're folding cloth. So then we say, okay, you take this much cloth, and then like that you do this, you do that. So it's all about these technical aspects.
But someone who's expert at it doesn't, it's just they by nature do that. They don't think, oh, it's this long and this.
Yeah.
You understand? So it changes. Then it's about folding the cloth because there's a purpose. The other one is about the technique of folding the cloth. And then, of course, once you've folded it, there's a purpose. You know, so that's the thing. We do our sadhana for that, and then ultimately that's for Krishna. But then one comes to the point where that sadhana is being performed, but it's about Krishna. So those technical aspects become secondary because of the personal aspect being primary. Does that make sense? So that just comes with practice. That's why then sadhana is by... It's not a problem that someone's not very developed, because if they're practicing, then it will become, if they stay on the path.
So it's natural for YD to turn into
rough. Yes, it's natural. If that, you understand that that's what it does. Means it will become on its own way, it will always become spontaneous, but whether that spontaneity is with rules or without rules, that will be the difference. You know what I'm saying? Because in you could say is that the more mature personalities in Vaikuntha, their service in rules is spontaneous. They like to function within these rules. Right? Like that. So it's natural. But it's not, we wouldn't particularly call that spontaneous. Right? Spontaneous is because it's still about the rules, the expression of the rules. But where it goes... It's following the rules, but it's being put together as beyond the practice. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, like that. So what you're doing, the combinations and all that, are unique. Mm-hmm. But if you analyze it, they're exactly according to the rules. Does that make sense? But the basic rules that we're given to follow, it may seem to break those. Does that make sense? Yeah. But if you know how you do it, let's say like radish sweet rice.
Okay.
You know how to do it, you can take great radishes, cook it in milk, and come up with a sweet, and it's very nice. But if you don't know what you're doing, don't try it.
Don't invite Maharaj to cook it first time for him. Then.
Yes. Right. You should try it. You know, the first guinea pig should be yourself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. The Lord is therefore not in need of another's favor because no one is equal or greater than him. Actually, everyone needs the favor of the Lord for successful understanding of his human mission. So everyone needs the mercy of the Lord. But what we're talking about in these advanced levels, then the Lord interacts as if he's not the source. Right? But the point is one has to have that full commitment because the residents of Braja, then it's all about Krishna, right? So now, in the material world, it's all about ourselves. So by philosophy only, because it's not by sentiment we're going to adjust that. Because we're fully convinced and committed. You know, you have to admit that we're, you could say, very advanced on the material platform. You know, you could probably even say we're on the platform of prema for ourselves. Like that. So it's not by sentiment that we're going to be swayed from this, but by philosophy, by the intelligence. Right? Then once that is in place, that means we're switching it from the focus on ourselves to focus on Krishna. But we're doing that through philosophy, through regulation. But when it comes naturally, spontaneously, that the focus is on Krishna, then it doesn't require the regulations. Then it can be look the opposite because Krishna can take the junior position, but it doesn't matter because he's the center of attention anyway. Right? Does that make sense? The Kumaras continue. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, the dust of whose feet is worn on the head by others,
waits upon you. Right? So here now they're putting it the opposite way. Right? Before he's saying, I take the dust of the Brahmins on my head, that's why my feet have some significance. But here they're saying is that everybody's taking the dust of Lakshmi on their head, but she's worshipping your feet. Right? So she waits upon you as appointed, for she is anxious to secure a place in the abode of the king of bees, who hovers on the fresh wreath of tulsi leaves offered at your feet by some blessed devotee. O Lord, you are exceedingly attached to the activities of your pure devotees, yet you are never attached to the goddess of fortune, who constantly engage in your transcendental loving service. And so he's not attached to Lakshmi. As Lakshmi, he's attached to Lakshmi as his devotee. Because you always see, he and Lakshmi are never separated. But that's because of the devotion, not because she is the form of opulence. Because he is the support or the origin of that opulence. So that's not, he doesn't need the opulence from Lakshmi. Right? Because that opulence is his opulence. But she's just the potency through which it manifests. But the devotion she has, now that's the special place. Does that make sense? Yeah. How can you be purified, therefore, by the dust of the path traversed by the Brahmins? And how can you be glorified or made fortunate by the marks of Sri Vatsa on your chest? And so he just appreciates that this is the culture. They're following it, inspiring others to follow it. That means now you have more people to be qualified to come back to Godhead and serve Him. Right? And Lakshmi is that she is the one who knows how to serve. And so then everybody following her. So then he feels happy that she is residing on his chest. Right? So therefore he'll say, I'm blessed by these things. Because then in relationship, that's going on nicely. Right? But in philosophy, in tattva, he's the source of everything. So it's not that. But the point is that position of being the origin of everything has a certain taste. Right? It's unlimited taste. But there's greater taste in the personal interaction between himself and his devotees. So that's the greater position. So that's why, in that case, he puts himself as the debtor. Make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. That's why it means others will touch on these. They won't spend so much time on these. Right? Because everybody knows these things, but it's kind of like left, that he's God, of course it can happen like this. But because our philosophy is a chinta-veda-veda-tattva, then that detail will be gotten into, because that's where all this taste comes in. So the more you can appreciate this, the greater and deeper the taste. Right? So they appreciate it in Vaikuntha. They're pointing out these contradictions, and they appreciate it, but they're not, like, entering them. Does that make sense? But the acharyas bring those things out, so that's the specialness of the Gaudiya line. Right? Yes.
So can we say that the real question of the free will is the question of devotion, whether we take it or not?
Yes, yes. That's the thing. Because the other things, you have your free will, but it's kind of like, how do you say, you're controlled by the set patterns that are there.
Yes, by the modes.
Yes, by the modes. But then, on the devotional platform, then not being controlled by the modes, that actually is freedom, you could say. Still, you function within the category of what is bhakti, because we're subservient to the energy, we're not trying to control the energy. So that's the fun part. We're trying to control the material energy, but the material energy controls us. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say, you have a man and a woman, so the more the man is trying to control the woman, the more he's actually controlled by the woman, but he doesn't know. And the less he's trying to control the woman, then he actually does. Like that. So that's why you see Lakshmi, she's making the attempt to serve the Lord,
because he doesn't have the attachment to the opulences that she offers to everyone else, that that's why they're worshiping her.
Mm-hmm. So he's not trying to control her.
No, he's not trying to control her, but because of that, he completely controls.
She's happy.
Yeah. So that's the thing, that's the part, that's the difficulty, is we have this, you know, hierarchical understanding of things, and then there's the personal and the reality. So generally we'd like to take it that the personal is not the reality, that the other is the reality. But the other is only the reality when you're dealing with the material. But when you get up higher than that, the personal is the actual reality. Right? So the only point of the philosophical, even on the material, is because these relationships aren't actually functioning how they should. You know, so it's about the person. The person does something wrong or annoys you because they're a person. Right? It's not that because they're impersonal, that's why they're bothering you. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to verse 21, says, "You are not very attached to Lakshmi by pure service. The word ati indicates that the Lord is not attached to Lakshmi just because she is his wife, but he is attracted by her service as a devotee." Right? So in other words, these positions and that are not why he's attached. It's the service that's rendered. Right? And it's coming through the medium of being the wife. But it's not about that. It's about the devotion which is rendered. Right? So it's not about what's being done, it's the mood in which it's being done. So that's much of the time what's missed in the material world. It's thought that what's being done is the important thing. But it's actually the mood in which it's being done. So that's why sometimes that mood is there, but what's happening doesn't appear to be favorable. Right, so it takes a little bit more, advancement to appreciate that. Right? Like the gopis are seemingly acting unfavorable to Krishna, but the mood of devotion is exactly the same. So for them, for him, that's fun. Does that make sense? But down here, because we're not God, we're trying to be God, we don't like it. You know, it's supposed to go mechanically how I want it. Does this work?
Yes.
Yeah? Yes. Srila Prabhupada explains another element of Lakshmi's service in his purport to the same verse. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is sometimes envious of the tulsi leaves, which are placed at the lotus feet of the Lord. For they remain fixed there and do not move, right? Because she can sometimes serve like that. She has other things to arrange. But the tulsi leaves just stay at his feet. So she's thinking, you know, that the tulsi leaves have such a greater fortune than she does, right? Even though tulsi is technically an expansion of her. You know, so it's the same principle, right? As with Krishna. Whereas Lakshmiji, although stationed by the chest of the Lord, sometimes has to please other devotees who pray for her favor. Lakshmiji sometimes has to go to satisfy her numerous devotees, but tulsi leaves never forsake their position, and the Lord therefore appreciates the service of the tulsi more than the service of Lakshmi. When the Lord says, therefore, that it is due to the causeless mercy of the Brahmins that Lakshmiji does not leave him, we can understand that Lakshmiji is attracted by the opulence of the Lord, not by the Brahmins' benedictions upon him. The Lord is not dependent on anyone's mercy for his opulence. He is always self-sufficient. The Lord's statement that his opulence is due to the benediction of the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas is only to teach others that they should offer respect to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord. And so she, being opulence, is naturally attracted by opulence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, it means you're attracted to something that has a similar nature. Right, so whatever your nature, something that has the same nature but greater, you're attracted. Right, so that's the whole element. But it's being presented that it's because of his getting the blessings of the devotees and the brahmanas. Therefore, then Lakshmiji stays with him. Right? So that's just the pastime. But as Prabhupada points out, that's so that we understand the importance of the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. So we respect them. Otherwise, the tendency is just to respect God and not really worry about anybody else. Right? That's the pretty straightforward, how you say, default setting, you could say. You know. Does that make sense? You know, okay, it's obvious I'm not in complete control of everything here if I really analyze, although I may not like to, but if I really analyze it, yeah, I'm not in control of everything. I don't make the sun come up and go down and stuff like that. So then someone's there. So, okay, God's there, okay? But after God, I'm next. You know, so the tendency is, you know, okay, me and God, you know, we have this thing going on here, right? But he's pointing out that, no, the Vaishnavas, the Brahmins, they have to be respected. That's just standard culture. Okay? The Kumaras continued, O Lord, you are the personification of all religion. Therefore, you manifest yourself in three millenniums. And thus you protect this universe, which consists of animate and inanimate things. Right? Because he manifests in three of the millenniums because those three, they're actually committed to practicing Dharma to greater or lesser degrees. But in Kali Yuga, not so much. So he generally personally doesn't appear in Kali Yuga. He has a Shaktivesh avatar come. But because this is a special... particular millennium, then therefore he's coming himself personally as Krishna in Dwapara and personally as Lord Chaitanya in Kali Yuga. Yeah? Mm-hmm. By your grace, which is a pure goodness and is the bestower of all blessings, kindly drive away the elements of Rajas and Tamas for the sake of the demigods and twice born. One aspect of the Tri Yuga Lord is put portrayed here in Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Lord is the personality of religious principles. In three millenniums, religious principles are protected by three kinds of spiritual culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. The Lord is called Triyuga in that way also. In the age of Kali, these three requisites to spiritual culture are almost absent. But the Lord is so kind that in spite of Kali Yuga's being devoid of these three spiritual qualities, he comes and protects the people of this age in his covered incarnation as Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is called covered because although he is Krishna himself, he presents himself as a devotee of Krishna, not directly Krishna. The devotees pray to Lord Chaitanya, therefore, to eliminate their stock of passion ignorance, the most conspicuous aspects of this Yuga. In the Krishna consciousness movement, one cleanses himself of the modes of passion ignorance by chanting the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, as introduced by Lord Chaitanya. That's all it says. The four Kumaras were cognizant of their situation in the modes of passion and ignorance because, although in Vaikuntha, they wanted to curse devotees of the Lord, since they were conscious of their own weakness, they prayed to the Lord to remove their still existing passion and ignorance. The three transcendental qualifications, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy, are the qualifications of the twice born and the demigods. Those who are not situated in the quality of goodness cannot accept these three principles of spiritual culture. Right, so cleanliness, we understand, but that's inside and outside. Austerity means one is willing to perform one's duties. One sticks to one's what one's supposed to do. And mercy is that just, you know, kindness to others, that one is able to extend understanding to others. Right, so we generally see these are the three that on this age are just really not, they're, how you say, conspicuous by their absence here. Right. For the Krishna conscious movement, therefore, there are three sinful activities which are prohibited, namely illicit sex, intoxication, and eating food other than the prasad offered to Krishnas. These three prohibitions are based on the principles of austerity, cleanliness, and mercy. Devotees are merciful because they spare the poor animals, and they are clean because they are free from contamination, from unwanted foodstuff and unwanted habits. Austerity is represented by restricted sex life. These principles, indicated by the prayers of the Kumaras, should be followed by the devotees who engage in Krishna consciousness.
Right. So these three, then they give rise to these three regulative principles. Because in this age, truthfulness or gambling is not so strong. It's there, but it's not everybody. Right? You see, generally everybody, illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, that's pretty standard across the board. But gambling, then that's, you know, has its pockets. Right? But otherwise it's not, and it's not necessarily something appreciated. Like you have a, what do you call it, referendum. Right? In a district or in a state, much of the time they'll vote against gambling. Right? It's not a, but if you said, okay, what about meat eating? Probably there wouldn't be, it would not be a big thing, or illicit sex, or intoxicated, these kind of, what do you mean? You know, and then they'll say, what next? They'll say, we can't breathe? You know? Right? So these three are very well rooted. But this last one, because in this age, truthfulness can still be there. Therefore, that's why then there's discussion of Krishna consciousness and this. And that's the one thing that everybody talks about is, oh, they lied to me, or they didn't tell the truth. Or, you know, this is the make it or break it in the relationship kind of thing. Right? Because that somehow or another still has a value. Does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, Lord. Quote. O Lord, you are the protector of the highest of the twice born. If you do not protect them by offering worship and mild words, then certainly the auspicious path of worship will be rejected by people in general who act on the strength and authority of your lordship. Because the Lord then supports it, and the Lord, he puts his efforts there, therefore everybody else will then consider it important. But if he didn't, no one else would. Dear Lord, you never want the auspicious path to be destroyed, for you are the reservoir of all goodness. So, because if the path of auspiciousness is not there, how will people uplift themselves? How will they progress? Because progressing to hell is not considered a dynamic, movement or direction, like that. I mean, some, maybe, how you say it?
Emo.
Emo, yeah, okay, that's maybe good, it's like that, but, going to a hell in a bucket sounds good, like that. Here it's, yeah.
So, he always supports. Just to benefit people in general, you destroy the evil element by your mighty potency. You are the proprietor of three creations, and the maintainer of the entire universe. Therefore, your potency is not reduced by your submissive behavior. Rather, by submission, you exhibit your transcendental pastimes. Right. So here they're understanding the philosophy is still intact, but he shows this submission not because it's philosophically that's the position, but by doing that, it's his pastime. Right. That he's supporting the Brahminical culture, the path of upliftment, getting rid of the obstacles of inauspiciousness. Right. So then that's his pastime. Because otherwise he wants it that way, it'll be that way. But he, since the point of affection is free will, therefore the living entity is left with free will to express that affection. And if they misuse their free will, then it goes the other direction. But the point is, it's not that you remove the free will and then when they're willing to use it for Krishna, then you give it back. Because then, how does that work? Because if you don't have the free will, then how would you actually want to use the free will to the Lord? So it always is there. Because right? That question comes up, how does God let us do this? No, it's not a matter, because that's what you want to do. Like that. Does that make sense? It's not like the teenage girl is sitting there and talking to her friends. How does my mama let me SMS all day? How does she allow this? It doesn't work like that. You understand? So we only say that when I do my free will and I get a bad reaction. But if I do my free will and I get a good reaction, I'm never saying, why does God allow this to happen? Why doesn't he control the situation? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. We never mind predestiny if it's good. But when it's not good, then they say, where's my free will? Where in predestiny? You know, we get confused. Right? So that confusion only comes because of this. Right? Because we only want good for ourselves. We don't want to accept that non-Krishna conscious action gets, you know, not nice results. Right? Oh Lord, whatever punishment you wish to award to these two innocent persons, or also us, to us, we shall accept without duplicity. We understand that we have cursed two faultless persons. So in pointing out about the punishment, they understand is that he doesn't have to give punishment because they feel they've been wrong. But because he said he approves. So that must mean there's something there he wants. So then whatever punishment you want to give, you know, it's not dependent upon our curse. And at the same time, it's because we behave badly, then whatever you want to give us, then that will also be. Okay, verses 23 to 25. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verse 25. The sages, the four Kumaras, now reject their cursing of the two doorkeepers, Jai and Vijay, because they are now conscious that persons who engage in the service of the Lord cannot be at fault at any stage. It is said that anyone who has implicit faith in the service of the Lord, or who actually engages in transcendental loving service, has all the good qualities of the demigod. Therefore, a devotee cannot be at fault. If sometimes it is found that he is in error by accident or by some temporary arrangement, that should not be taken very seriously. Right? So that's where the Brahminical culture comes in, because one can appreciate that. But the Kshatriyas, because their business is seeing that things, the judicial aspect is supported, therefore then they'll take it less kindly. Right? Like that. The cursing of Jai and Vijay is here repented. Now the Kumaras are thinking in terms of their position in the modes of passion and ignorance, and they are prepared to accept any kind of punishment from the Lord. In general, when dealing with devotees, we should not try to find faults. In Bhagavad Gita 9:30, also it is confirmed that the devotee who faithfully serves the Supreme Lord, even if found to commit a gross mistake, should be considered a sadhu or saintly person. Right? So here it says, it's also confirmed. Okay, no, here. In general, when dealing with devotees, we should not try to find faults. So that's not a standard position. Means the. So in other words, here Krishna and Prabhupada, the acharyas, are not so appreciative of the, what do you call it? Self-appointed generalissimo of finding faults in everybody. You know, it's like you have in a country, you know, you have this parallel government, you know, where the guy is self-appointed. He's decided he's the, you know, the leader of this, you know, particular new government, though it doesn't really have any meaning. But whatever it is, he likes it. His followers like it. But it's self-appointed. So this thing is, this, no one's asked anybody to do these things. But people seem to appreciate the position. Right? So here Prabhupada's saying that's not important. Right? Only if there's a specific incident, if there's dependence, then you're finding fault simply so you can encourage them and train them what's correct. But just to find fault generically, what's your responsibility to correct? Right? So in other words, if you find a fault, you have to actually have the ability to correct and be willing to make the effort to do it. So if you only throw out into the, you know, into the ether that the what is false, then where's the responsibility? So that's not actually adult. One's generally taking it as I'm mature because I can see faults.
But actually, you're mature because you take responsibility. Right? Just like a child, they don't take responsibility. They find all kinds of faults. Right? But they don't take responsibility. So the difference is an adult takes responsibility. Otherwise, if you're just finding fault, that's actually childlike. Right? Because to find faults, that's easy. Right? One thinks, no, that takes the mature thing to find the fault. You know, and if you have the ideal, then, you know, that's the immature state. But I'm more mature, so I see the faults. But actually, it's the other way around. Finding faults is that. But if it's a matter of you can see faults, and because you know what should be done to correct it, that has a value. But it's not done at the expense of the ideal. You don't destroy the ideal to point this out. It means pessimism is not a superior philosophy to optimism. It's a matter of you show how to temper the optimism so that you can actually get the proper effect. Right? Is this, yes.
Which relationships is it okay to find fault and correct, and which kind of relationships is it not?
Means ones that you actually have a relationship with. Means if it's in a senior position, that's the nature of it.
And in a relationship of friendship?
You can try. If it works. But then you have to understand is that, see, if it's in the senior position, it basically goes one way. But if it's on friends, it goes two ways. So you find fault, then the next moment they'll find fault. So as long as you can handle that, then go for it. If you can, you know. So I remember in one high-level meeting, Selma came in, you know, and had targeted one, I think there was the chairman at the time, and yelling and screaming and this and that. And so others were trying to shut him up. And then the chairman says, no, it's not a problem. I can dish it out. I can take it. You know? So he had no problem. You don't want to yell and scream, but hey, I can also dish it out. You know, so when you finished, it might go the other way. You know, so does that make sense? But if you can't, you don't want them correcting you, then don't bother correcting them. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then in that case, you put yourself in the junior position. You know what I'm saying? If you find fault but can't correct and can't tolerate being fault found in yourself, that means you're actually in the junior position, not the senior. Like that. Because when you're dealing with culture, these things tend to reverse on you without knowing. You know what I'm saying? Because junior means you can't tolerate it. That means you don't have the character. Well, someone who can handle being corrected means, in other words, a person who can properly correct others is someone who can handle being corrected. So he's correcting juniors, but his seniors are correcting him. But if he doesn't have faith and authority, he is not qualified to correct juniors.
So there needs to be mutual respect, or in friendship relationship.
Friendship is generally mutual respect. So his point is based on what is your commonality of friendship, that's where it should be. That's where your relationship stands. Outside of that, you should not go. You know, unless you want to expand the relationship. But otherwise, it's not. You know what I'm saying? He's doing something wrong. That's his business. You know? Does that make sense? Unless there's the affection is such that's going to have an effect that you don't want to see. And so then you can try. Does that make sense? Yeah.
You do find faults in people because you don't want to commit the same mistakes. You don't pronounce.
But that's there. That means you're intelligent. If you can see that there's something weak there, and that's not recommended, then you know not to do that yourself because they're doing it. They're getting that reaction. So if you don't do that, you won't get that reaction. But it's not necessarily seen as a fault in the person. It's just, in other words, that action has a fault.
It's more generic.
It's generic. Yeah.
Observation.
Sorry?
Observation.
Yes, an observation. In other words, that action gives that result. But it's not necessarily a fault. Because if it's in materialists, it's a fault. But if it's in the devotees, it's just a temporary manifestation. Right? Because temporary means you've been in the material world unlimitedly, so that's stopped. And you'll go and be in the spiritual world unlimitedly. So we have this temporary one lifetime in between these two. So it's not actually that big of a deal. So, yeah.
Doesn't mean it's not annoying, but yeah. Okay. Due to former habits, he may commit some wrong, but because he engaged in the service of the Lord, that wrong should not be taken very seriously. Because if you're on the path to correction, you don't worry about it. It's just like, let's say, the example the Prophet gives is someone's in the shower, and they're really dirty. So what's the point of criticizing that they're dirty? They're standing in the shower. Right? So that's the whole point. If they're not standing in the shower, then yes, you can point out they're dirty. But the devotee is in the he's in the process. So what's the real point of pointing out the dirt? Right? Unless they've had the whole bath and there's a spot of dirt and they say, "What about that?" "No, I like that dirt. Looks good." Then you might make a point, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah, or they just go in, kind of get wet and come out, and you say, "What about the dirt?" Says, "No, but people will think it's a tan." so then you can maybe make some comments. But the point is if you're in the shower, there's no real meaning to pointing out how dirty they are. Okay. His devotee knows things are wrong. That's why in devotional service, but by habit, they tend to keep doing the same things wrong. Verses 26 to 34. Who is actually at fault, the doorkeepers, the gatekeepers, or the four Kumaras? Delighted to have seen the Lord, and having learned of the divine opulences of the Vaishnavas, the sages departed Vaikuntha. The gatekeepers, however, became morose, lost their luster, and fell for Vaikuntha. Quote, the Lord replied, "O Brahmanas, know that the punishment you inflicted on them was originally ordained by me, and therefore they will fall to a birth in a demoniac family. But they will be firmly united with me in thought through mental concentration, intensified by anger, and they will return to my presence shortly." Right? Because remember, that was their anxiety, is that they'll forget the Lord. Right? So then Krishna hears that they will come to the material world. Like that, they'll follow the material world, but they'll never forget him, right? But that remembrance of the Lord will be intensified by anger, right? So it'll take on that movement. Because if it's an anger, then there's some meaning to fighting, right? Otherwise, there's not so much meaning, right? 26. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord said, "O Brahmanas, your curse was produced by me. In order to have my two servants, the greatest devotees, take on the nature of demons, though they have bodies of pure sattva and are the best devotees and brahmanas, they acted unfavorably towards you and made you, the best of atmaramas, angry. And then you cursed them. All this has been done by me only. It is not an offense of my doorkeepers or an offense committed by you." Quote, "But what is the cause of giving such suffering to these two devotees, since you are affectionate to your devotees?" End quote. O Brahmanas, know the cause. Reflecting carefully, understand, since you are omniscient. What more can I reveal? Here is the cause. Jaya and Vijaya had a desire arising from prema. Then quote, "O best Lord, O Lord of Lords, Lord of Vaikuntha, if your fighting instinct is not satisfied because everyone else is so weak, and because we are not your enemies, then make us two guards unfriendly towards you, and you can have pleasure in fighting us. Since we servants cannot tolerate even a small degree of decrease in your full happiness, we pray that this should be done by necessarily ignoring your quality of affection for your devotee." This is, end quote, this is how they thought. So this is then where that point comes. Right, so Jaya and Vijaya had originally thought that because the fighting tendency is there in the Lord, who is he going to fight with? Right, because the only ones that are great enough to fight with him are his devotees. And the devotees will never fight with the Lord. So therefore they're saying, so let us forget that so that you can then fight and then this way be happy. Right? In fulfilling the desires of his devotees, the Lord accepted another desire. And thus he did not directly reveal the secret to the Kumaras. They then thought, even the greatest devotees can fall from Vaikuntha because of their great offense. What then to speak
of where we, who are just dull reflections of sadhakas, can fall from this earth, planet, end quote. Thus it should be understood that the Lord desired to warn the sadhakas to be careful of committing great offense. That's why it's not brought out as a main point. Right? Because the point is this, because otherwise if we bring this out as the main point, then we don't actually catch the lesson to be learned. Right? Because the lesson to be learned is you don't offend the Brahmins or the Vaishnavas. Right? That's just not done. Otherwise, why is Krishna making all these points that his position and his opulence and facility is all coming because of his respect of the Brahmins? Right? So he's saying that for us as sadhakas. So we can't allow that this aspect of the pastime. Right? Because otherwise the question is, how could this happen? And why would the Lord want it? It can't come up because, and at the same time, we don't catch these points. Because we're not on this point. We're not on the platform of the Kumaras, we're not on the platform of the doorkeepers. Right? So that's their pastime. Right? But for us, we have to learn that we can't, we have to be very careful about offending the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? So that's why it's said here. Thus it should be what it... Okay. Yeah. Thus it should be understood the Lord desired to warn the sadhakas to be careful of committing grace offense. So that's why even after this late in the pastime, then only the Acharya reveals this point. Because otherwise if revealed before, we would just think, oh yeah, it's just the pastime. Lord Brahma said, so then even the compilers, you know, when we were asking about it, I don't remember, because it's for later. Right? Lord Brahma said, after seeing the Lord of Vaikuntha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the self-illuminated Vaikuntha planet, the sages left that transcendental abode. The sages circumambulated the Supreme Lord, offered their obeisances, and returned, extremely delighted at learning of the divine opulence of the Vaishnava. The Lord then said, because that's what they gained from it. Right? So they learned that. So this wasn't really revealed, you know, directly to them. You know, in the main aspect of the, in the hidden part, then yes. But in the, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But being on the platform they're at, they're not going to make mistakes. So therefore, they will have that understanding. The Lord then said to his attendants, Jaya and Vijaya, depart this place, but fear not. All glories unto you. Though I am capable of nullifying the Brahman's curse, I would not do so. On the contrary, it has my approval. Right? Because here is also the blessings, is that the devotees get to take part in this wonderful pastime. Right? Because of all the pastimes, these ones of Jaya and Vijaya are some of the major pastimes that one discusses in hearing about the Lord. Right? So it's not just a pastime, but these are the major pastimes. Right? And then they're also going to come back very quickly. Does that make sense? 27:29. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary, seeing that Jaya and Vijaya had just arrived, the Lord spoke, go to the material world. Seeing them weeping and wailing, the Lord again spoke to them, his heart softened by compassion. Do not fear, may you too have good fortune. Do not go there, always remain serving me in Vaikuntha. The negative word ma can be used with both yatam and baishtam. Seeing that they were now happy, he said, though I can nullify the curse of the brahmanas, I do not desire to destroy my own promise. End quote. I have made a rule to accept the inevitability of a Brahmin's curse. Just as Garuda sacrificed an expansion of his wing in order to maintain the inevitability of the thunderbolt's power. Right? Because the thunderbolt came from Krishna. Right? Krishna had told Indra to make this because he didn't have a weapon strong enough. So the potency of the thunderbolt is coming from Krishna. So to respect that, not specifically Indra, then he dropped a feather.
right? But that dropping the feather was to represent, you know, the dropping of his wing, like that. You should take on the role of demons in one of your expansions, and at the same time remain in Vaikuntha in your swaroops. Later this passage is found. So then we see is that, then the thing is, how can one fall? So technically they didn't. They expanded, and in their expansion, then they came as the demons. And in the swaroop, they were still there. Does that make sense? So then these are other points that are brought up. Because the thing is, if one accepts that the Lord can do all these things, then it's nice. Then hearing these, then it just makes it more amazing. But if it's only because of these things, then you can accept, okay, now it's okay. Then one doesn't actually appreciate the position of the Lord. Right? So does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the... Later, this passage is found. O king, when the associates of Lord Vishnu saw the soldiers of the demons coming forward in violence, they smiled. Taking up their weapons, they forbade the demons to continue their attempt. Nanda, Sunanda, Jaya, Vijaya, Prabala, Bala, Kumuda, Kumudaksha, Vishvakshena, Pata, Tridat, Garuda, wow. Jayanta, Srutadev, Pushpadanta, and Satpata were all associates of Lord Vishnu. They were as powerful as 10,000 elephants, and now they began killing the soldiers of the demons. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:21, 15-17.
What is this one? The passage wants to prove?
It's showing that they were still functioning as Jai and Vijay, even though they were also there as the demons. Does that make sense? Because the Lord said they were crying because they have to leave their post. Because, okay, so you stay. But the point is, he says that word ma will do both. It means you stay, you go. Right? So they're going to stay in the sarup, but they're going to go as expansions. Right? But as we see here, that's not the main feature of the pastime. You know, it's an inside element. Because the main point is the Lord's desire, the main point is the proper respect for Brahmins and Vaishnavas, right? These are the main points. And then these are other points that then bring out that, no, everything's as you would expect. Yeah. In the narration of Vamana and Bali, Jayan Vijaya mentioned among the associates of the Lord fighting. But after being born as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, they would later be born as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. The explanation of their expansions must be given in order to resolve the contradiction of being simultaneous in the form of demons and associates of the Lord. Right? Because otherwise, how can they do both? But that's by the Lord's grace. Otherwise, the jiva doesn't expand. The jiva is the jiva, and that's kind of where it ends. Right? The Lord expands, his internal potency expands, but the jiva doesn't. Right? But by the Lord's grace, if he wants, then the jiva can expand and have so many forms. Like that. Yes? No? So then here, then that's by the Lord's grace it's happened. So again, it goes back to the Lord.
So it's nice to have extensions.
Yeah.
You know, if it's important, you have. If it's not, you don't. Yeah. You know, someone like Rupa Goswami, now he's in all these pastimes. We're just in this pastime, but he's here and he's in all the next ones. So that means he's expanding like the Lord's expanding to take part in the pastime. Like that. But that's the Lord's potency that happens. Yeah. Never heard of that before.
Yeah. What about that?
Not about Jai Vijay. Yeah, no, this is a...
This departure from Vaikuntha was foretold by Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. She was very angry because when she left my abode and then returned, you stopped her at the gate while I was sleeping. Footnote 8.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, right? So somehow or another, yeah, being a guard, it has its positive elements, but it has certain other elements like that. Also, they say Ganesh ends up with an elephant head for a similar reason. Because he was guarding his mother's room, and when Shiva came, he wouldn't let him in.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks on this connection. Though this verse is seen in many editions, it has no commentary because it is not traditionally accepted as a verse. It means it's there, and so the acharyas are leaving it there, but Sridhar Swami or others haven't commented, so then they're not commenting. Because in other words, the main point is that the principle of that they had that desire. So it's out of service in that, rather than it's just a further, you would say, well, how could that happen? But then Lakshmi's upset. Then you say, okay. Right? But here it's more, it's about, they had this desire to serve the Lord in this way, and the Lord approved it. And so then that happens. But at the same time, as they don't want to lose their service in Vaikuntha, so then that's kept, and they can do the other thing. But as another point, then it's there. But the Acharya just says, you know, there's no comment on this. So the Lord assured the two Vaikuntha inhabitants, Jai and Vijay, by practicing the mystic yoga system in anger, you will be cleansed of the sin of disobeying the Brahmanas, and within a very short time return to me. Right, because otherwise, an eternal associate, why do they need to be purified? But, because of the pastime, they've offended the Brahmins, therefore then the curse, they'll get purified by meditating upon the Lord. Right? But they're doing it in anger, but they're meditating on the Lord. Right? So that connection to the Lord is what's purifying. So that's the... After thus speaking at the door of Vaikuntha, the Lord returned to his abode, where there are many celestial airplanes and all surpassing wealth and splendor. 30 and 32. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verse 32. It is clear from this verse that all the incidents took place at the entrance of Vaikuntha Loka. In other words, the sages were not actually within Vaikuntha Loka, but were at the gate. It could be asked, quote, how could they return to the material world if they entered Vaikuntha, end quote. But factually, they did not enter, and therefore they returned. There are many similar incidents where great yogis and brahmanas, by dint of their yoga practice, have gone from this material world to Vaikuntha Loka. But they were not meant to stay there. They came back. Right? So this is then another aspect you could say, well, how could they fall? Well, they're at the door. Right? So then being at the door, they're not technically inside. Right? And in this way, then one can't get upset that they're leaving Vaikuntha. So just, in other words, since the important element is by absorbing one's mind and thinking of the Lord, one becomes purified, and one should respect the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, right? Then, if that's the main thing to learn, if these side points are going to give you trouble, then here's answers. But that's not the main point. Sometimes we take, oh, this is the real main point. No, these are just side points. Right? So, in other words, it's more important that we absorb ourselves, accept and absorb ourselves in the process of devotional service. So if there's these other little things on the side, they're dealt with. Only so that one has faith in the process and continues. And then by becoming purified, then these will not be an issue anymore. Right? But they may be in the beginning. Right? So for those who may have these issues, then here it is. Does that make sense? Because then we say, oh, well, they didn't actually, you know. And because otherwise we might have to, well, but if they can fall, if I go back, then I might be able to fall. So then, but the point is I'm engaging in this process because I go there, I won't come back. But if I can come back, then what's my point of, you know, since I'm going to be here anyway, so hey, let's go for it. You know? So to avoid all that kind of thing, then you throw this in. Does that make sense? But if one's convinced, no, it's about serving the Lord, then these kind of things are just pleasant little details, you know, that add to the sweetness of the pastime. Right? So they're not about establishing the philosophy, supporting that, or giving us faith. It's a matter of that sweetness. But if that faith is, then these answer that. Does that make sense? So they have this dual role. Those who have a difficulty with it, it answers, and so they can move on. And those who don't have a difficulty with it, it adds more sweetness. So it does both. But those two doorkeepers, the best of the demigods, their beauty and luster diminished by the curse of the Brahmanas, became morose and fell from Vaikuntha, the abode of the Supreme Lord. Then, as Jai and Vijay fell from the Lord's abode, a great roar of disappointment arose from all the demigods who were sitting in their splendid airplanes. In his commentary to Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 145, Jiva Goswami shows how the Vaikuntha residents only have spiritual bodies even when they descend to the material world. We may note that Shishupal and Dantavakra had previously been Jaya and Vijaya, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha Loka. In the following verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.135, Maharaj Yudhishthir asked how it was possible that these two liberated residents of the spiritual world could fall into the material world and accept bodies made of the gross material elements. The king said, "The bodies of the inhabitants of Vaikuntha are completely spiritual, having nothing to do with the material body, senses, or life air. Therefore, kindly explain how associates of the personality of Godhead were cursed to descend in material bodies like ordinary persons." In another place in Srimad Bhagavatam, we also find the explanation that the bodies of Shishupal and Dantavakra were not material, but eternal and spiritual. In other words, Jaya and Vijaya were never actually accepted material bodies. This is explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Jaya and Vijaya descended to the material world to facilitate the Lord's pastimes there. Their being cursed by the four Kumaras was simply a pretext. The Lord's pastimes were the actual reason. This is confirmed by the following verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.16.29. Quote, "The Lord then said to his attendants, 'Jaya and Vijaya, depart this place, but fear not. All glories unto you. Though I am capable of nullifying the Brahman's curse, I do not do so. On the contrary, it has my approval.'" The reason for the descent of Jaya and Vijaya to the material world is described in the following prose statement from Uttarakhanda Padma Purana. Quote, "On the pretext of being cursed by the four Kumaras, Jaya and Vijaya descended to the material world. Actually, the only reason for their descent was to perform pastimes with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In order to attract the minds of the devotees with his transcendental pastimes, the Lord desired to fight great heroic battles with certain demons. In order to fulfill this desire of the Lord, Jaya and Vijaya three times accepted the bodies of kings. The bodies they accepted were splendidly effulgent and fully invested with anima and other mystic powers. They were not ordinary bodies." So then, here's even a further point that when they did that experience, when they did expand into the material world, they actually came not in material bodies. They just took on, so it looked this way. Right? Because otherwise, then how does the pastime work so nicely? Okay. So we'll continue.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki
jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Prima.